Thank you, and thanks for being here. As mentioned, I'm Gary Schnittke. I'm an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. There I primarily work in extension and research, doing a lot of work with crop economics, crop risk management, crop insurance, farm policy, and that sort of thing. So like everybody else here, or the ag economist, I'm interested in risk. I also, as in the role of being an extension economist, often get involved in a lot of the soybean sort of technologies that are coming along. My usual, and I'm not complaining about this, by the way, my usual role is that the agronomist or somebody does an experiment and then they come to me later and ask, are there economic implications to this? And I usually say, yes, there are. And by the way, I'm not sure I want to be involved earlier because I've just been involved in a double crop wheat soybean study where I listened to a bunch of, I'm on the study with them. And so I'm sitting through these meetings where agronomists are arguing about the replicated trials, and I have no concern about, you guys just do it, let me know when you're done, and give me the results. I'm sure all of those decisions are important, but I have nothing to add to those discussions. What I'm going to do here, though, is take the point of view, you have agronomic results from your trial. What are some of the six, and I got several questions that if I saw it, here is what I would ask about it as we're making those applications to the field. So I'm assuming you got some results. Now we want to know if there are some economic implications to that. One of the first things, and this before I get to the results, the economic environment that you're in obviously does matter, and if you need to get a feel for what costs are from soybean production, you can go to any of your states and get the soybean budgets. We at Illinois also make those available, and actually we follow cost and returns through time from farms. So we have Northern Illinois, Central Illinois, Southern Illinois, and then we divide up Central Illinois into high productivity farms so that we follow what the costs are on those aggregates on those farms. If you want that data, and we keep these publications up to date, we always give the previous 5 years of results, and we actually can go back to 2000 and even before that for selected costs, and then we give our projections from 2017 and 2018. A lot of the time that when I get agronomic results and you say there are two bushels advantage, I'm going to take a two bushel advantage, multiply it by the price, and say, at most you can pay that for it. Then I'm going to ask, is this replicable in your field? And we'll get to these actual questions. And does it always happen, or are there years when it doesn't happen? But so knowing that price, knowing the yield advantage or disadvantage, hopefully the yield advantage there is, you multiply it, this is how much at most. And usually you're going to be less than that. Also, just keep in mind the other cost involved in production here, and I listed all those from our farms. These are non-land costs, so you would have to add cash rent on top of this yet, or however you're controlling for land. And I lumped machinery in there together at 33%, but that's almost always, if you take an example, the largest cost lumped together, and so you got to be concerned also, does this technology change anything in your equipment complement? Because the minute you begin changing your equipment complement, you're changing those costs, and the analysis gets much harder. All right, so that's by way of background. Go there if you need to, or your state budgets, and you'll get a feel for what the costs are. Here are my five questions. All right, agronomist comes to me. here's my yield advantage, or another one is, here's an email. This is an actual email. I have a farmer emails me, and God knows why he's emailing me. He goes, all right, the seed treatment costs $75 an acre. Is it worth it? And you're going, all right, $75 divided by $9 is what I would figure the cost is. You've got to get X bushels of yield from that this year. Can you do it? All right. Then I would also provide them a little bit of risk assessment. All right, if you're only going to get an advantage in half the years, you got to double that. And they knew that before they emailed me. But you know that a lot of these seed treatments are bigger numbers. Here's my five questions though. You have this replicated trial. Usually, are these results applicable to entire fields? I'm taking this replicated trial and going into what's usually a controlled situation with all the other variables controlled, right? That's what you do in these replicated trials. And then we just had an example on Michael's paper. What if we change one of these things? And I'm going, I don't know. You tell me. So are these results applicable to entire fields? Is the practice easily scalable? And I'm going to run through an example. I'm going to give you a couple of examples here and how I would think about those questions. But seed treatment, yep, very easy. Very easy. Double two planters, one for corn, for one for soybeans, that's a very tough analysis. All right? Are there fixed costs? And that's almost always around machinery. So if there's fixed cost, if I have to buy machinery or there's some other fixity to this investment, I want to know that, and that is going to make the threshold for getting over that higher. Where does revenue come from? And usually it's in terms of higher yields, although it doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And then, does this practice have risk implications? I mean, does this make my farm more or less risky? Again, farmers will tend to do things that are more, or practices in general, that if it reduces risk, there's a tendency to adopt it more likely. Although we could argue about that, but those are the questions. You have this replicated data, and here's what I want to know. The other thing, which I didn't put up here as a question, is I'll also ask, did you throw out some of the years of data? All right, in Illinois, 2012, drought, right? And a number of people said, I have no experiment for this year. Well, yeah, you did. It's zero. There's zero difference. That's important from an economic standpoint. It's a failure in your case, but in our case, it's a zero. I mean, those years happen. They happen. I would put a probability in that of 1 in 20, 1 in 25. I don't know the tails, but it's still, yeah. That is important. There's my five questions. Here's some of the things that I have seen that have come to my desk as an extension economist, and some of these I've tried to evaluate, and some haven't. And again, this is usually they're usually asking me for a quick evaluation, and sometimes that's not possible. But here's the way I look at it. You come with me a seed treatment. You're going to treat these seeds. That's, from my standpoint, pretty easy to evaluate. It costs this. I need this. I mean, fungicides is harder, but I know the cost. I need this bushels. And if it only works 1 in 4 years or 1 in 5 years, I need this bigger bang when it does work. And if it doesn't pass the profitability standpoint, you sort of get concerned about it from any standpoint. Here's the ones that, from my standpoint, get more difficult. Two planters, one for corn, one for soybeans, all right? High fixed cost, high risk. All right, double crop soybeans. We're doing more evaluation of that in Illinois. We followed by double crop soybeans. And in fact, that's one of the projects I am on now. We're looking at early harvesting of wheat, planting soybeans, central and southern Illinois. That has a lot of risk and timing implications. And then a Draper head on a combine, and I said more easy, which my English teacher would get angry about. But that's, from my standpoint, all right, Draper head combine. I'm going to replace one head with another. It's a fixed cost, but it's an easier decision to evaluate than double crop soybeans or two planters. All right, because I'm just replacing a head. It's got a fixed cost. All right, let me take you through a couple of examples here. Questions about each technology, my seed treatment idea. Here's seed treatment. Are the results applicable to the entire field? And I'm going to look at you and say, are they applicable? I mean, if you did this, what are the conditions in which this will work and won't work? If I put this in the field, does soil types matter? Does timing of the year matter? Does this all matter? That's your question, not mine. All right, you have to, and then you're going to come back to me and say, yeah, it does matter. And then we're going to get in this long discussion, and I'm going to have a hard time evaluating it. And you'll want to go out and do more trials, which is fine. But there's these questions that exist right now. So you make your best do with what you have there. Is the practice easily scalable? And here I mean, is it easy to take that practice and move it to the entire field? My answer to seed treatment, yes. And it's also easy to test. And the easier it is to do an in-field trial and test it, the more, one, more likely it is to be adopted. Number two, it's more likely that they're going to test it, right? So if I can split, I can seed treat, go do seed treatment on half, other half, yield advantage, yep, no, all right, we've evaluated, right? So, and move on with life. Are there fixed costs? Nope. Just buy the seed, it's ready to go. What is the revenue? And all right, so I have the seed treatment. I'm paying X dollars, and they always seem to be about $10, so, $10 to $15. So if you get above that, people get excited. If you get staying within that, they sort of think about it. And that's going to have to come in terms of higher yields, right? If I do the seed treatment, I have to get higher yields. If I don't get higher yields, what am I doing? Then risk. I'm presuming that sometimes this, all right, so farmer goes out in this field. I'm going to test it, right? Then the person's going to ask, well, it didn't work this year because XYZ wasn't a problem. So you get into those issues as well, which is the risk and implication. But if you don't get it in higher yield in a couple of years, what are we doing here? And does the practice have risk implications? Now here's where we could argue. Does this practice have risk implication? And it will depend on obviously the seed treatment and what you're seed treating for. I would argue yes, but limited. But it would depend on that seed treatment, right? It really does depend. All right, so that, from my standpoint, is really, all right, cost this, you better get this. All right. Two planters. All right, in Illinois, Actually, we did a study. That's not a grant new study, but we were looking at more profitable farms versus less profitable farms in central Illinois. The more profitable farms tended to have two planters, one for corn and one for soybeans, and they started planting at the same time. All right. So, which isn't actually saying that that's the more profitable thing, but it says they're adopting it. All right. So here's what I used, and Emerson did this. All right. You have these data planning studies, and then they develop curves, right? Your curves, usually you're developing them. Again, if I'm an economist, I want to see the risk implication. You know, it isn't just the curve, it's the average curve that I care about. It is the whole variability around it. And if you had 5 years of study, data in your study, I would tend to, one of the things I would do is use each one of those as a observation and see if it does matter versus the average, which is sort of getting at risk. But it isn't just the curve, the average curve. It is, you know, the variability around that. Again, if you look at some of the curves that I look at, it would say that there is a yield penalty for planting soybeans later. Maybe it's just as big as corn. Your first reaction is, should I plant soybeans versus corn first? And the farmer said, why don't we just try two planters here and go at the same time? Is the practice easily scalable? And I would answer no. You're either going to do this or you're not. Once you bought a planter, you're going to plant. If two planters, you're going to do it both at the same time. All of a sudden, I have changed my whole spring. Right? I've changed everything in that spring planting period, which is farmers will run you over on a tractor in the spring, right? I mean, it's the most critical time of the year. That's a big deal, right? Are there fixed costs? Most definitely. I mean, you just bought a new planter, and it's sort of worse than you think. You now have two planters, so you have doubled your fixed costs, and you've doubled the... You doubled the fixed cost per acre. I mean, you doubled the fixed cost per acre. So there has to be an advantage here. And fixed costs are absolutely critical. What is the revenue? And I guess you're going to need higher yields. Now, all of a sudden, by the way, I have just gone whole hog. How am I ever going to know that, really, on my farm? Right? So I've had to trust somebody to get to me to this point. And does this practice have risk implication? Yes. Coming in higher cost, very much an unknown before you move into it. So seed treatment versus higher cost. I want to run through one other technology. All right. Scouting.
I found 15 tires.
Oops, I'm sorry. Scouting. All right. We've talked about scout. I'm going to apply this pesticide, or I'm going to scout and apply. Right. You take fungicides, and I'm not going to apply it every year. I'm going to scout, and if it's a problem, I'm going to apply it. All right. I have a story about. So if you Ken Steffi and Mike Gray, who some of you might know, but they were entomologists and they were big, very big on IPM. Farmers liked them. But they did a lot of field studies. And after, so they were doing this field study at a place on a farm that I know. Farmer come up to me afterwards and said, those people are weird. They see bugs and just getting out of the car. So scouting, when you, the expert, are thinking about scouting versus a farmer thinking about scouting, you're coming from two dramatically different perspectives. Are the results applicable to the entire field? I would argue that scouting is very difficult to implement. I mean, it's not just finding the bugs or what pest or whatever they are. You have to develop a schedule to find it. And whenever I see scouting, and again, I'm an ag economist, usually sitting in the audience listening to people trying to convince farmers to scout, and you're going, this is sort of complicated. I think I'm just going to spray it. You know, is a practice easily scalable? No. I mean, if I got 1,000 acres and I'm going to scout on it, which 1,000 acres of soybeans isn't, and it's, by the way, it's spread over 20 miles, which is also not untypical. That's hard to do. Are there fixed costs? I would say no, other than you count the people involved. It isn't me, the manager, going to go out there and scout 1,000 acres. I have to have some employees that know how to scout the 1,000 acres. And by the way, when you show pictures with a soybean pitcher, you look underneath, and then there's these little bumps here that identify something. And then you show another picture and say, this one is almost like this one, but they're different. You're gone, screw this. I'll just spray. I'm just telling you how I'll just spray. Where is the revenue? Lower cost. And does the practice have risk implications? And most definitely, just coming from the difficulty in, all right, if I'm going to scout, I put myself at risk that I miss it. So I bring this up because I understand more about why farmers don't do this, even though most of the times you would say that it's economical to do it. And I think they don't do it because of the risk implications and the management difficulties in implementing those. So in summary here, I've given you 5 questions. And this is, and now I have to give this gross generalization. Most crop scientists underestimate the transferability. That's not fair to you because you ask always that questions. But you know, it's all right. I have this replicated trial. You always have this difficulty, risk implications are important, scalability is important, and oftentimes budgeting gets you a long way, but as we've seen with Michael and Chuck, and I'm sure Paul will later, there's additional analysis being done. But I think those 5 questions will help think about how easy or hard this technology is going to be adopted. I'll stop there and...
All right, we got some time for questions.
What do you recommend in terms of a crop price? Do you recommend using an average crop price, or what is your recommendation when you're looking at the revenue?
So if, when I'm looking at revenue, I sort of say if it's a seed treatment, you're going to use what your best estimate of next year's price is going to be. So... if I were doing that in central Illinois, and you can do this anywhere, go to your local elevator, look at what fall bids for next year are, take that price, and that's probably going to be pretty close to that'll be a good estimate of what the price is going to be. Go to your elevator for 2018, go to fall 2018, get the bid price, and you're on your way. If it's 2 planters, I want a longer run price. And that's, I don't know what, I tend to use 4-ish corn, 980 soybeans, 950 to 980 soybeans. and we'll see if that's right.
So it sounds like it's harder to predict risk when the variable you're managing in a field is time. And what if we have technology that doesn't, a little context, I do my work in South Asia, and we're introducing essentially precision to these fields where they're doing seeding by hand, right? We're adding a little spinner rate you would fertilize your yard with. It doesn't necessarily improve yield, but it improves like uniformity. And what we found was it actually reduced risk from environment, but didn't improve yield. How do you manage things that relate to time, which the spreader lets you out earlier, or doesn't it necessarily improve yield? Can we effectively predict or talk about risk without having a real yield boost?
Sure, you can. What you're going to do then? What I hear you saying, and the other ag economists can, I hear you saying that your benefit is that not. And my guess is that it actually does increase the average yield, because you're saying that I'm going to take the bottom end and bring it up. Right? Am I missing that? Bottom end brings it up. So then you have...
You mean the worst performing farmers, bringing them up?
Yep.
Right. How do we know, we don't have a metric beforehand of how they did the year before? What we can tell is we essentially disentangle or decouple environmental risk from actually over irrigation water. That's what we found was actually diminishing yields, but this thing reduced the damage from that to yield, but didn't necessarily improve yield. So essentially, it's like, how do we measure what precision farming adds to a farm when in our data it doesn't tell us it improved yield significantly? But it reduced environmental risk.
One of the things I do there, it's a very crude way of looking at it. If I don't know some information like that, I start doing what is. What is that technology cost? What does the improvement need to be in order to pay for the technology?
You knew what the average yield was. Then you think you know something about the spread on yields for the various farmers.
Sure.
Where does that data come from?
From that year's data set.
From that year's data set.
Yeah, but we have previous yields we can look at, but they're not. The controlled experiment was just control treatment. So these are these kinds of questions about risk I'm interested in.
So you have a control treatment that says that your spread goes down when you introduce that technology, that the yield doesn't change based on that experiment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I haven't tested the actual spread. I know the yield is not significantly different. But it was just a kind of general question about how do we measure risk when we don't see a yield improvement.
So you've got to cut the variance off somehow. You got to cut the variance off somehow, and you got to say, and if you're cutting the variance, you're looking at the lower end of the probability, lower yield distribution. You got to. That's what you have to. That's what you believe.
Okay. Stand by your office.
Maybe instead of cutting the variance down, you can look at the interquartile range.
Yeah, or something at the bottom end.
But if you compare the variability, you can quantify.
I guess the thing about using a normalized interquartile range is that it's a lower
key. We're getting you there. We'll figure this out.
Like this is good.
Okay. We need to go to our next talk. Thank you, Dr. Sinkley.